encourages you to join them in supporting public radio. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, with more than a dozen shops, businesses, and restaurants, including Pretty Nails, Milo's Restaurant, and McCandless Photography, located on the lower level, still using a traditional film process to create contemporary portraits.
Good morning, and welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. When developers set out to build something new, could be something as simple as putting in a road where there is no road now. It could be building a factory, could be building a housing development, could be building a shopping mall. It's sometimes very difficult to look into the future and to project how that change will change other things in that area, will change how that land is used. And certainly it's the case that sometimes development does go in unexpected directions. And once you have done something, once the road's there, the houses are there, the factory's there, the mall's there, you can't really go and take it out. So with that kind of problem in mind, researchers here at the University of Illinois have developed a computer model to help planners and developers to look ahead and to ask that question. Let's take a geographic area. And let us say, we'll put in a road or a mall or houses, and then look at what other kinds of things are likely to happen, how that area is likely to grow and develop and change if we look 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 25 years down the road, to try to give us some sense where things are going, and that might indeed influence our decision to do that development in the first place. We might want to do something different. That's sort of the idea. But our guest for the program this morning is Brian Deal. He is assistant research professor in architecture and urban and regional planning here at the University of Illinois, and is one of the people that was involved in developing this model, which is called the Land Use Evolution and Impact Assessment Model, LEAM for short, and it has been used here at various places around the state of Illinois, at first just to pilot it, and then again increasingly just to see, well, how it works. We'll talk a little bit about it and about this difficult matter of planning and trying to look ahead and decide what's a good thing to do and what's a problematic thing to do. And questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
Now, I hope that I have done an adequate job in describing what it is that you have done and what this program is designed to do.
No, you did a terrific job. It's a program that's designed to help people make decisions, basically, and to involve others in those decision-making processes. Because what LEAM does, it not only it's a computational tool, but it's also a process of looking at the way development affects our lives. And what we do is we produce graphics and other easy-to-understand pieces of information to get other people involved in a conversation so that everybody can be involved in what goes on. It's not a black box. It doesn't happen outside the system. It happens within our communities, and we should all be involved in those decisions.
Mm-hmm. And it is, just so people understand what it is we're talking about, a computer program, a model, a way of loading all kinds of information into a program, and it's the kind of thing that you can do if you happen to have a supercomputer where you can load in all sorts of different variables and then say, all right, suppose we do this. In what way will making this change affect other sorts of things that make up this system? And that way that you can then project, say, you know, you put in a road and then you say, well, okay, what exactly does that mean? How is that going to affect development? Or you can say you put in a mall. Well, you know, how's that going to affect development? Or how is it going to affect the environment? Or I gather you can ask many different questions about, say, we'll take one action and we say, what will follow? What is likely? What is likely to follow from that? If we did that, what other sorts of things would happen?
That's exactly right. We basically take a regional landscape and we divide it into millions of little cells, we call them. And inside each one of those cells is a model that says, how likely am I to change, depending on what goes on around me? A new road goes in, it increases my likelihood to change because it's right next to me. Or someone next to me develops, I'm likely to change as well because now I have access to utilities and services. So every time step that we analyze the system in, each cell asks a question. how likely am I to go? What's going on around me? What's the economy like? Is anyone looking for housing or commercial space? What's happening around me? And then I decide whether or not I should go and change. If I do change, it affects the other cells around me. And then it follows on. There's this series of events that occur, and it changes. So once we get that pattern down and we calibrate the model using historic data, try to say, look, we run the model from, say, 1993 to 2000, and we say, how well did we do? We changed variables and modify things so that we get a good understanding of what's going on in the region. But once you have that down, then you can do just exactly as you say. You ask all kinds of what-if questions. What if this? What if this? Are we happy with this? Are we not happy with this? Would we like to see something else happen? Related to that is the what I call the so what question. Because once you have the patterns down and say, well, this might happen when we put this road in, it might encourage growth in a place that we didn't expect it to. So what? Is it bad? Is it good? Do we care? Do we not care? What are the environmental impacts? What are the economic impacts? Did it help our retail industry? Did it screw up our stormwater system? All kinds of questions can be asked of that once it happens. And then we give that feedback and say, do you want to do this or not? And it's a communal question once you get to that point.
So obviously the business of predicting the future is very difficult. But what you're doing is you have constructed your model retrospectively. You've looked back in the past and said, all right, in these particular cases, action A was taken. Result B, C, D, and E was the result. So that you're using that as both, I guess, to construct your model, but also to test the model, to see can we in fact develop a model that will predict the future is exactly the right
very
word. With some high level of accuracy, will suggest to us if we do this, it's pretty likely that these other things will.
That's right. We don't predict the future. Nobody can predict the future. And there's all kinds of chaotic events that we don't know what might happen. And there's all kinds of other things. We do with some mathematical certainty or within a range of uncertainty, assess what might happen given a range of events. And then the questions start from there. I mean, it's not necessarily, you know, are my property values going to go up or down, or should I purchase something in this region? It's if this does happen, are we satisfied with that? Is this something that we want to pursue? And the way to think about it locally for me is unintended consequences of development. I mean, did we know when North Prospect opened that we would lose a lot of grocery stores in the urban areas? I mean, was that something that we thought about at all? So there's unintended consequences to actions that we take, and we're just trying to get at what they might be and then how to assess what they might be, I suppose, and are we satisfied with that, and then make a better decision than we had in the first place.
Well, there you have put your finger on, I'm sure, for people around here, a favorite example of development gone wrong, and I suppose that other people, depending upon where they live, will have their own examples, where they look at something and they look around them and they're not happy with something that has happened, or indeed that, as a result of something that's happened in one area, something else has happened someplace else, and they say, now, surely this was not what people who started development had in mind. And I'm sure that it's also the case that developers, they try to think about these sorts of things. I'm sure they're not going just blindly saying, well, we don't care what happens. But then that does raise the question, well, now, if we don't have your computer, before we had your computer, how were these decisions made? Were indeed people asking some questions about when we do development in certain sorts of ways, what are going to be the long-term consequences?
That's a really good question. And I mean, it's not up to the developers. The developers are the economic engine generally for this type of development. They're taking risks. You know, they're looking out and trying to see if they can make money on it. They're generally not looking at the consequences to the residents. Sometimes we get into that. But in the past, really, those questions have gone unanswered and really unaddressed. And sometimes we get into it and we try to do impact assessments and figure out if somebody does something, how will it affect us. But when you look at a region and you say, for example, a development takes place in a particular spot. And you do an impact assessment on that particular spot, you don't get at all those things that happened regionally that really changed the way the region works. A good example is in Peoria when we looked at a ring road that some of the small towns were really interested in, getting people a little closer to their town, having interchanges and a road that bypassed the city to the east. Some of the small towns were really interested in participating in that and pushing IDOT to look at that. And when we analyzed it, the changes that occurred were not what they thought was going to happen. And IDOT said, yeah, well, that's what we've been trying to tell you. And they said, well, that's not what we thought was going to take place. And we're maybe not for it now. I mean, maybe this isn't what we really were after. We need to do some economic development in other ways to get what we want. So that's one example of some of the things that can happen. But typically, I think in the past, developers have been driving the train generally. If you look at our comprehensive plans, in most regions, you'll find they're just a series of exceptions and changes, you know, that we had a plan, we had an idea, and then developers come in, they have different ideas of what will sell and what won't sell. And we're not really trying to affect that. I mean, we're actually trying to improve that, help the home builders find places or build in the right spots that are going to be marketable and help to improve the communities. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not an anti-development. This is actually, in some ways, pro-development. But we actually try to stay neutral. It's not for or against. It just says, if this happens, here's what might happen. Do you want it to see it go? Growth is inevitable. I mean, no growth is not an option, although some communities in this area might think that is, but it's not an option. Change is inevitable. How we change and how it grows are the important questions, and getting our hands around those things and doing things that we want to see happen are important.
Hmm. We have a couple of callers here. We'll bring them into the conversation in just a moment. I should introduce again our guest, Brian Deal. He is Assistant Research Professor in Architecture and Urban and Regional Planning at University of Illinois, and was very much involved in developing this computer model that we have been talking about. It's the U of I's Land Use Evolution and Impact Assessment Model, LEAM for short, which is, as we have explained it, it's a kind of a computer program that would allow you to take a geographic area and put into your model a lot of information about it, and then ask questions like, if we do a certain kind of development, suppose we make some changes to the roads, suppose we say we're going to build a big shopping mall, suppose we say we're going to put in a housing development, and can be a lot of different sorts of things, then it helps to try at least to answer the question, well, what if we do that? What would be the result? And would there be some things that would result that we wouldn't foresee? But if we knew that thing was going to happen, well, maybe we would do it differently, or we wouldn't do it at all. That's kind of the idea. And you've been doing this now, running this now for a couple of years, I think. Is that right?
We started with an NSF grant that was initiated in 1999, somewhere around there, maybe even 97 now. It's getting to be a ways. And we have a laboratory of very capable staff and PhD students that run this. We work with the Army Corps of Engineers at CERL. Doing this kind of assessment for the DOD. The DOD is very interested in encroachment questions on military bases. When people move in across the street from a military base, then they start to complain about the noise and the dust that's generated when the military trains their soldiers. And so they're worried about that and say, well, how do we work with the community to grow in ways that we can grow together and be good neighbors? So they're finally getting their act together and working with people outside the fence, as we call it. So we've applied it in Peoria. We're working really closely with St. Louis, been involved a great deal in St. Louis, and now we're starting to work with the city of Chicago and the regional planners up there.
Mm-hmm. We have a couple of callers, and they are both in Urbana, starting with line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I sort of want to ask you a philosophical question, and let me preface it. I've worked in computer simulations for many years, and chemical and biological and physical systems were simple systems. And when I turned to social systems and economic systems, and all economic systems really are social systems as well, I eventually gave up because it seemed to be fundamentally unpredictable. And as you said, there's the law of unintended consequences. And having lived in this town for many, many years, I watched when they put the big ball up, Market Square, and basically decimated Urbana and Champaign. And then they tried to put in a pedestrian mall on Neal Street. Then the development happened on Prospect, which has done damage to both the malls. And what really bothers me, and I know this from doing traffic simulations, is that when they've done predictions and built highway systems by adding exits or extra lanes or whatever, it's almost always turned out to not, they didn't get what they thought they were going to get. And part of the reason was that they had to deal with human beings, and how human beings are going to behave is sort of basically unpredictable. And what bothers me most in the area, your area of development, is that what we end up with when a planned community or a planned environment has been put in and the people decide to go somewhere else, is we end up with a lot of empty buildings. And we not only don't gain from the new structures, but we actually end up with some pretty awful-looking places. And I see this all the way along north of 74, as I just watched the old buildings that are not, they're just abandoned. And it seems to me that you must be, I know you're concerned about that. Do you take into account that whatever you plan on building, you can't say how long it's going to last and make plans so that it can be replaced by whatever else is going to come along? Because I really am dismayed when I see all of the empty lots and buildings and areas in this town that were the result of planned environments. And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Well, a couple of good questions. The first, I think, should be addressed is the problem that we sort of touched on briefly, and that is that social systems are chaotic and unpredictable, and that is true. What we're doing is not trying to predict how social systems behave, and probably my background as an architect and planner helped me to be bold enough to try to say that we can at least try to assess what might happen and decide if that's a better thing or a worse thing. So we're just touching on very minimally touching on what might occur. So I agree completely. Cannot predict social systems are very difficult to assess, but we want to do better at making decisions, and we need help. And all the and just from my discussions around the country, every community in the country needs help doing this. Everybody wants to do this. If we could, you know, expand our operations, we could help millions and millions more people. Not possible. Research operation, you know, hopefully we get to a point where other people can take these things up and spread them around and make them a lot more accessible once we get to that point. But so everybody wants to know about these things, and we're just trying to help people make better decisions. Mm-hmm. That we're taking one small step in a direction to say this might happen. What do you think about that? Let's talk about it. First of all, lots of times we don't talk about it. We don't talk about the fact that the mall might have repercussions to our downtowns, or that North Prospect might remove stuff from the mall that we built in 1970. So those are excellent questions. That and gets to the second point of his question, really, and is I am concerned about those things. That's really how I got started in this as an architect. I was concerned about environmental sustainability and energy conservation, and then I got to the point where it looks like we can do good buildings, but you do a good building in a bad place is still a bad idea. And how do you figure out where these good places are? Well, it depends on the community. It depends on what's going on, and it depends on what direction the community wants to go. And I think that just trying to get our hands around it and talk about it is a step in the right direction. For example, Curtis Road interchange. When we look at interchanges and the way interchanges affect communal activity and growth, we find that in places where there's not a lot of activity and there's not a lot of growth taking place, that highway interchanges have very little impact. You end up with a Monticello Road with a gas station and maybe something on the corner, but not a lot of activity. But when you put that same interchange in a place that is extremely active and there's a lot of pressure in that area for growth, like there is in Southwest Champaign, we continually move in that direction. There's going to be a lot of activity on that ramp. There's going to be a lot of activity at that interchange, and it's going to move some of the things that we're doing in other places in the community to that place, because that's where the activity is taking place. And we should plan for it, and we should know what might happen, and we should think about how it's going to affect North Prospect, you know, the same way North Prospect affected, like he's describing, the north of the interstate. we should know how these things might take place, or at least try to get an idea of what might happen and then talk about it and decide mm-hmm. whether or not we still want to go through with it. We do want to go through with it, but we don't want this to happen. Well, how do we, what are some of the policies or investments that we can make that might work in our favor, the way we want to see things work?
All right, let's talk with someone else in Urbana. This is line number two. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. Maybe turning to something slightly, only slightly less chaotic, and that's the weather. Is the model you've proposed sensitive to changes in weather? Does growth, redistribution, redirection have an effect on as simple a thing as rainfall?
Well, not on weather patterns generally. I mean, we have heat island effects and things that we can measure after we do things. It wouldn't affect the weather patterns, but weather patterns would affect stormwater management, for example.
So there is a weather component to the model.
Yes.
Maybe I should have asked that.
What we generally do is once we get a pattern for change, then there are stormwater management models out there that really capable people have developed over the years that are good, that we can develop the inputs for our models. Say, look, in 2030, if this stuff does take place, here's what the stormwater stuff looks like. Here's our water quality in our streams, for example. Here's the places that might, the quantity issues of flooding areas. You know, these are things that might occur based on the types of impervious surfaces that we're developing. We do have that component involved in the model.
I bring it up in particular because when I first came to Champaign-Urbana, there was either a factual or urban legend that if you hunkered into town during tornado weather, you wouldn't be hit. The periphery of the town in almost every direction would be, but a slight shallow bowl effect in our part of Champaign County seemed to divert storms a little bit around. And then the town grew enough so that people, in effect, moved out of that bowl and began being hit in the city limits by tornadoes. And that's why I ask about the model, whether, in fact, you can tell people in emergency services there's not going to be a growth this, there, and the other. Prepare for slightly increase in tornado damage.
We could do that if we knew, you know, if as you're suggesting, if we knew where those patterns are most prevalent, we could say these are risky areas. And that is a really good point, especially with some of the events that have happened here recently, that we're living in places that we wouldn't have developed before or lived in before. And they are high-risk areas, risks from all kinds of natural disasters. And we can assess those things. Those are sort of post-processing issues. Once the patterns are developed, we can kind of assess where these things might happen. But another good question that sort of arises from that is that emergency response question. As we spread out, I mean, it gets more difficult to respond, and you end up spreading out the services. It costs more to service the fringe. I mean, a beat patrol, a police officer can only handle so many miles, and a fire station has so big of a radius that they can get to within that 5-minute or 10-minute window. So these are important questions that we can assess and then again decide whether or not we still want to go through with these things. Hey, we're going to require in a few years another school in this region or another fire station or another investment of some kind that we maybe weren't thinking about as we grew in these directions.
And finally, if I may, have the people that you've presented this model to turned to you and began asking for certainty? They'll say, we're going to think of doing this. What will happen? Is that also part of human nature? Thanks, and I'll hang up.
Right. It certainly is, although we would avoid that at all costs. We don't use the word prediction at all. I mean, it's an impossible task, as the first caller pointed out.
What word do you use to describe what you do? I mean, seriously, I understand the concern. As we just talked, obviously, you cannot, you're not, and would not say we will tell you what will happen. But you know, what do you talk about projection?
We talk about uncertainty. And we talk about a range of uncertainty and how certain we are. And, you know, we're improving that as we go. But, you know, we're better than we were yesterday in all aspects. If we have the model, we're better than we were yesterday, no matter what. Yeah. We got a little bit more information to make a decision on. And we have a range of uncertainty. And we do the math and say, you know, within this range, we think things are likely to occur.
We have, we're at our midpoint here. We have a couple of other callers. We'll get right to them, but I would like to introduce again the guest, Brian Diehl. He is Assistant Research Professor in Architecture and Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Illinois. That is one of the people who was involved in developing this computer model that we've been talking about, the University of Illinois Land Use Evolution and Impact Assessment Model. This model that is designed to assist developers, urban regional planners, to try to figure out what would be the likely consequences of certain kinds of development. Asking that question, we'll take a geographic area and saying, if we do something, if we put in a road, if we put in an interchange, if we build houses, if we build a mall, how might that be likely to affect that area in the future? How will it grow and change as a result? So that we might want to ask the question, well, do we actually want to do that in the first place? Do we want to put in the road, the interchange, the mall, the houses, you know, so forth? So 333-9455. We do also have toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. We have someone here on a cell phone. Line one. Hello.
Yeah. I just want to make a couple simple comments. Let me make the simple one first. The tornado one, I think, is, but this actually gets to something larger, is really has to do with the fact that the area in a circle or an ellipse that's around, that's near the edge of it, is much larger than the center. And so even if tornadoes were just random, the chance that it would get near the center is pretty small compared to the chance that it would get, you know, it would hit something in the edge. And as you make that bigger, that effect gets larger. So it's something that can easily it's not especially intuitive because you have this squared relationship going on.
I'm sure also our meteorologist Ed Kieser would be quick to point out that it is a myth that tornadoes can't hit cities. Because they have. They certainly have. They've hit Chicago. Right. They've hit other big cities. So no one should somehow get this idea that if they were in the middle of a big city, it was impossible, because it is possible, and it has happened.
Right. I mean, just as a simple experiment in your house, figure out how much better you do buying a large pizza versus a small one, and look at how much more you get, and you'll see. I mean, it's high school geometry, but what it does mean is that, as the professor pointed out, the periphery starts to get really big, and servicing it can become very, very difficult. Anyway, my larger point has to do with the impossibility of prediction. I mean, a couple points. One is that prediction in the social and behavioral sciences this kind of modeling in the social and behavioral sciences is very young. It's only been going on for a little while. I think the general notion of sticking to what you called intervals of uncertainty, which is to say, well, at some level we don't know anything, and with our program we can reduce our interval of ignorance, as it were, is a good way of putting it. It seems to me people are having an argument about the word prediction versus, say, projection. And is that, in your experience, the notion of prediction means deterministic?
Yeah, I think you've got it. You've hit the nail right on the head.
I don't understand that, but that doesn't hit me at all. But
the difference between prediction and projection.
Oh no, I think he understands that. I think he's just saying that. Why don't other people understand?
I don't understand where that particular distinction came from. I mean, I come from a statistics background, and yeah, of course all predictions have uncertainties attached to them. That's just normal. But the one thing I will point out as an issue to skeptics, to some extent, I mean, I think what you're doing sounds incredibly useful. Weather prediction is limited to a couple weeks time horizon, but that doesn't mean we don't get an awful lot of good use out of it. I mean, and it's wrong sometimes too, but you know, it's incredibly useful, and boy, are we glad we have it. You know, so I think just because it's a difficult task, and because sometimes it's wrong, doesn't mean that we can't really benefit from it. So I'm going to hang up and listen after that. Thanks.
Okay.
Well, thanks. Those are good comments.
Well, unless you want to say anything further, we can just go on. I'm sure that you would agree with what the caller
said. I agree completely, especially the idea of the levels of ignorance. I mean, that's a great way to put it.
All right. Let's talk with someone in Belgium by Danville. Line 4. Hello.
Hello. A couple somewhat different topics for you gentlemen. First off, this is just off the top of my head question here. Wasn't there a computer gaming kind of program called The Sims that did something very similar to this?
Oh, yeah. SimCity. Yeah. Still out there.
Yeah. So it's a lot. That's not near as sophisticated as yours, I'm sure. But that's the first thing that came across my mind. But the second thing is that you're completely aware of around Champaign, the small towns that have been dramatically affected by the way Champaign has grown, shall we say, in Urbana. Same thing's happened in Indianapolis, Chicago, Portland, any big city. And a quality of life disappears beyond the horizon of the city, if you understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about dealing with the city itself, but how about a community 35 miles out? Well, now it's changed a little bit because now it's closer to a bigger city.
Mm-hmm.
and the quality of life has changed. Now, does that come into this program you're dealing with?
Yeah, we actually deal with much larger regions. In St. Louis, we're dealing with 11 counties. It's about 25 square miles. I mean, it's a big area. It's not a small piece. We try to deal with the urban center and all of the small towns that are connected to it in some way. Try to, in general, the metropolitan statistical areas that the census says, these are places that are economically tied to this place. We try to look at that entire region in one shot, which is the reason for the supercomputers. We end up with millions and millions of cells that are interacting at the same time, and we need to parallel process these things and put them on lots of different machines in order to get our answers out.
Now, what I'm getting at, though, is that let's say you live in Baltimore, okay? And Baltimore is maybe 50, 60 miles from the Eastern Shore. Now, a lot of people live and work in the Baltimore, D.C. area,
mm-hmm.
and that's their source of income. But they don't like the lifestyle there. They want to go live farther out. But the people farther out don't want these people here. Do you factor that aspect in? That's what I'm saying, the
yeah.
negative aspect of this growth from just people not wanting so many people close to them.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, we do actually, and we're able to handle that by limiting what happens in some areas. In St. Louis, for example, there's an area called Wildwood that the model says is ripe for rapid change in the next 20 years. And when we went down and talked to the people in the region, they said, well, Wildwood has a really slow and no-growth policy, and that's not likely to happen. And that's exactly the kinds of things that we'd want to look at. I mean, you say, hey, we're not interested in this change here. We need to then set up the policies and set up the interventions that will keep it from happening if that's the way the community wants to go. I mean, but you need to get a handle on it. Say, look, we're likely to go. In 20 years, we're going to have to deal with this. In some way, we should deal with it now so that we're ready for it. Either start to set up zoning. A lot of small towns in this region don't have zoning set up, don't have any laws or really anything to help them to make these decisions or to promote things or discourage things. So setting those things up is important for those communities.
Yes. That's pretty much like the Portland area. They have some real restrictive laws about, you know, what kind of development is going to happen around their community.
Mm-hmm.
While they also like to promote the interior of their community also.
Mm-hmm.
They want you to rebuild the interior of the city.
Right, so they're trying to encourage something to take place. And maybe a model like this might be applied to that region, and they say, you know what, we don't want this to happen. We want growth to occur in these places. How do we encourage that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're starting to set up their laws and policies that encourage the things to take place. And it doesn't. So they're not discouraging growth. They're just encouraging it in different places for different reasons.
Yeah, you might as well use the infrastructure that's already there instead of going and build a whole brand new.
That's right. And we have that problem here with our water treatment facilities, you know, that are at or near capacity. And what we find is sort of an aside from your question, but what we find is that that really makes little difference. You think it would. You think that when you hit this standard and you have to spend another $10 million for a new sewage treatment plant that you would stop growing in that direction and go somewhere else where capacity is not near limited. But it doesn't happen. We just build a new one. We keep going in that same direction.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks. Awesome. Just for a second, and I have been sitting here thinking, going back to when some of the things we were talking about in the first half of the conversation, about the way development has happened, particularly commercial development has happened around Champaign-Urbana. And we talked about the fact that, you know, there once was a time that we have these two cities that had pretty strong downtowns. Over in the city of Urbana, we had a nice little enclosed mall, and then Marketplace was built. And it took an awful lot of business away from the two cities. It was really bad for Lincoln Square, and the Marketplace was going along, great guns for a while. And then we saw this development on North Prospect, just sort of unbridled growth up there, which has taken business away from the mall. And then other places around the two cities, and then two cities, they thought, well, we're going to have to compete with that. So now in Southwest Champaign and over in Urbana, they're saying, how can we do the same thing? And it begs this question, now, why do we keep doing this over and over again? I mean, is the only thing that is determining growth somebody's idea of economic potential in some relatively small area?
Yes, in a lot of ways. I mean, we have planning and we have planners, and they do a great job. And there's a lot going on, though. I mean, there's a lot of political pressure for places like Urbana to do certain things. Or not do them, you know, as it may be. I mean, and all we're trying to do is say, look, here's what's going on in this region, and here's what might happen in your place. You know, is this something that you want to do? And do you want to go out and compete for those things? I mean, those things were, as we've been talking about, this chaotic social structure is really going to be difficult to suppress that kind of activity. I mean, that's some of the things that makes this place work is this economic activity. We move things around. I mean, there's a limited amount of resources in the region, is the way I see it, and they're not growing that fast comparatively to other places. And so you're just moving them around. I mean, you're moving something out to North Prospect. Well, it's coming from somewhere. You build a new one. We're not generating new stuff that fast. But just understanding that and then making the decision. We still might do it. And the competition between the communities is, you know, somewhat insane in my opinion. But, I mean, they still might do it. They still might say, yeah, we want that that they have, and we think we should get it over here. And we're willing to, you know, pay for that.
Yeah. Well, I certainly don't mean to knock people who do planning. That's not my intent at all. But wonder, even in a situation like this where, say, we're providing them with a new kind of tool.
Yes.
That will help them to think about, you know, what's likely to happen in the future. And then they might also then turn to potential developers and say, well, now, look, here's what might happen if we do that. Do you really want to do that? And then they're also turning to, you know, they're turning to local government and they're saying, well, do we really want to do that? I guess I wonder, you know, yes, you're giving planners another tool and maybe it will help them better anticipate what's likely to happen. But then I suppose then what happens with that ultimately is a political decision. Somebody has to make the decision, well, all right, are we going to do it or are we going to not? And that maybe then that's beyond the planners. That's not their mandate.
The community should set the policies. You know, the people should set the policies. The people should get involved in the conversations and decide what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And we're just trying to help them get involved in it in a lot of ways. It is a tool for the planners, but we feel like it's a process of engaging the public in the conversations, which doesn't always take place in a terrific way because we don't, you know, we've had trouble in the past relaying the information effectively to people so that people could understand what we're talking about, you know, and get involved in the conversation. And so these types of tools are really broadening the decision-making scope in a lot of ways and saying, look, everybody can understand what this says. And do you want to do that? If not, go over there and let's talk about it and let's decide. Not as a planner, but as a political organization.
Well, is it the case that planners are reluctant to actually say, look at a projected development, say, you know, we really don't think that this should happen? Do planners, is it in their heads, they're saying, well, this is not my job to say, no, I don't think you should do this. It may be my job to say, if you do this, this is what I think might happen, but that it's not my job to say, you know, I don't think you should do this.
This is a hot topic. And we've had some really interesting discussion, especially with some of the planners in the region, about this, because it is an interesting topic. And you've got it exactly right. I mean, some of the conventional wisdom is, you know, the planner is not elected. The planner doesn't represent the people, and they shouldn't be making decisions. What they should be doing is providing the information to the people that make the decisions, and then they can be held accountable for it, because it's difficult to hold a planner accountable, a civil servant accountable for those things. So typically, planners do not want to get involved, but somebody has to have a vision for the region and say, look, this is what's going on. Then let's have a broader discussion about it. Let's engage people in this discussion, and let's not limit the conversation. And these tools are enabling us to do that. It was difficult to do in the past. I mean, it's been difficult to do, to get it out of that small group. But typically, in general, to answer your question, the planners are reluctant to make this, and they shouldn't be generally asked to make those decisions. But they do need to provide the information, and now we're just helping them to give that to you.
Well, again, we have about 10, 12 minutes left. Our guest is Brian Deal, Assistant Research Professor in Architecture and Urban and Regional Planning, and we have been talking a little bit about a computer model that he worked on, helped to develop, that would give planners and developers a tool to ask questions about if certain things are done, then what might follow, and might help answer that question. Do we want to do this? Do we want to do it at all? Do we want to do it in a different way? And it's the U of I Land Use Evolution and Impact Assessment Model, in case you're curious. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Urbana is the next caller. That's line number two. Hello.
Yeah, I could see that, to sum up, the perspective is that trying to make the process more democratic, really.
Yes.
Where they'd have input.
Yes.
I think it was, you know, a bad case scenario is, I think it was Hinsdale. They're doing a lot of teardowns, and so it really pushed a lot of the retired people because they couldn't afford to get, you know, the taxes kept going up and up and more expensive. And then what would happen is that they would tear it down, put this house that would practically fill up the lot that was worth millions of dollars. The city wanted to slow it down, but my understanding is that two developers, and they were the big pushers behind it, threatened to sue. And what happened is that sometimes cities walk away from it.
Yeah.
So they get caught in a catch-22. Are you doing for Chicago in terms of the southwestern suburbs? Is that included in that or not, or just the city of Chicago?
No, it's six counties. Hinsdale would be part of that.
Okay, but about Will County, would that be in that or not?
I think Will County's in that as well, yeah.
Because that's going crazy.
Yeah, all the peripheral, McHenry County, we're working in McHenry County right now. It's growing like crazy.
Well, you know, what you have there is no planning at all. It basically is back to urban sprawl, and a lot of the farms are going. Whatever happened to this whole thing of planned communities? In other words, you know, the shopping, you know, there are examples, I guess, throughout the United States where they've done some of this, but why isn't this more considered?
It is being considered more often. Planned developments where transit-oriented developments, and we call them neo-traditional approaches to planning, where you try to increase the density of a place around a transportation system, like a Hinsdale, like that model almost, where you have a nice little downtown. People maybe work in the city of Chicago, but you know they have this transit station and these things that grow from that. And it is more prevalent, and is one of the things that, when we look at these patterns and we go to smaller communities, for example, when we go to Edwardsville, when we're in the St. Louis region, we say, here's what's going on in this region, you know, what do you think? And some of the solutions that we're trying to help them with are solutions that move in that direction, because people are interested in that.
The other one is that, and then you have a thing like, for my example, with Walmart, that builds buildings that are going to last 20 years, so... You know, I don't think that's a very positive thing, but that's the final comment. But
thanks. That's a separate question.
Yeah, but we'll leave that one out.
That's... Well, very good. Thanks for the call. Let's continue. We'll go to another Urbana caller. This is line three. Hello.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That was my question. I was wanting to see if you'd had a chance with your model to look at the effect of three super Walmarts in the Champaign-Urbana area? And if you did, what parameters do you look at? What can you look at with such a large entity as Walmart and how it might affect a local community?
Well, we don't. We have not modeled this region yet. We've been talking on and off with the county and others about it. I mean, we need to do a big region like the county to engage all these smaller communities that we discussed, and we need some commitment from them before we do it. I mean, we've talked about it as a group, doing it on and off, because we are interested and we are concerned about what goes on. It just has to have some buy-in, otherwise they might not use what we give them. We might be using this or giving them information that they don't want. So we need to increase those discussions. So we haven't done the region. But when we do other regions, what happens, what we can do is if we seed a region with a new mega structure like that, what happens generally is it encourages more of that same type of development in that region. And so when we go to a region, we set up an economic model. We use an input-output model that says here's the different sectors of the economy, and if you increase this sector, it's going to mean these types of jobs. And then we try to figure out what types of structures, what type of industries would satisfy those things, and then allocate them spatially based on mathematical probabilities. So we can look at what the impacts of the Walmarts are on the local patterns of development commercially and in different ways how it affects other pieces of the economy. Not in probably as much detail as you want it to happen, but...
Well, I'm just wondering, I mean, are you looking at the bigger picture, you know, balance of trade, or is your model more of a local type of analysis?
It's a regional...
11-county area or whatever you...
Yeah, it's a regional... I mean, one county is fine, and we've done... Kane County, and we're in McHenry County, and a county analysis is good because it gets at a lot of the stuff generally.
I mean, I suppose though that the economic activity in a county is dwarfed, by these mega conglomerates. So I don't know how you would make the comparison.
Right. It's a regional based model, so that some of those detailed things get washed a little bit.
Mm.
We would not be able to pinpoint a Walmart. We would say that there's commercial activity going on in this region or that there might be commercial activity going on in this region, and it might be a really prime place for retail development to occur. Do you want it to happen? That's more or less the questions that we would be getting at.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. Let's go to another caller. We have, again, someone on a cell phone here, line one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
You had touched briefly on the possibilities of putting a exit off of 57 in Southwest Champaign, and as I live there and often wanted one there, I was wondering if you could maybe discuss what are the ramifications of putting one in there.
Well, it's in the plan, and I believe it's the process is moving forward to have that happen within the next 5 years. The ramifications that I see are going to be really quick and... a lot of commercial growth in that region off of the ramp, similar to a North Prospect, maybe not quite as extensive, but I see a lot of commercial activity that'll take place down there. There's going to be a lot of growth that's going to encourage. People are going to be able to move around a little bit faster from that region. Right now it's kind of difficult to move around. We use transportation systems and travel times to assess where some of the probabilities of growth, and if you put that ramp in there, it gets a lot easier to get to some of the job centers in town and some of the retail centers. So it will definitely have an impact. I think it'll encourage a lot more growth, a lot more residential growth. It'll encourage a lot of commercial growth right at that ramp. It'll grow quickly. It's going to have a big impact, and it's going to come from somewhere. I mean, we're going to see the retail dollar is going to move in that direction for a time, and it's going to come from somewhere. We'll see the other shops closing down somewhere or other. I'm not sure where, but it'll have impacts.
Okay. What street was it going to be on? Do you remember?
Curtis.
Curtis? I think so.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. If you can be real quick here, we can get one more caller. Line four in Indiana.
Hello?
Yes.
I take it that this is like a alphabet soup. They come in and say, I want to have that there. I'd like to have that kind of quality here. Then the second question is, have you been in business long enough to find out if your probabilities against probabilities against probabilities is panning out as the buyers expect and you predict?
it is sort of like an alphabet soup. Generally, it's a regional question, and when you get to the localities, they do want to know specific things, and we try to help them with those. In terms of being in business long, no, as someone suggested earlier, and they were correct, and it's a very young this is a very young science, and you know, we're on the cutting edge of what's going on. And so we have not had a long time to assess what's going on. The first place that we're going to find out is St. Louis, because we've done the most extensive work down there, and we've been down there for a few years now. So we're starting to get a little bit of feedback on what's going on, what's really happening.
Well, we're going to have to stop here because we're here at the end of the time. One thing I do want to mention is for people who have internet access, there is a website that has some information about the Land Use Evolution and Impact Assessment Model. If you'd like to learn more about what it is, you can go to that site. It's www.leam, that's L-E-A-M, www.leam.uiuc.edu, and you can at least get a little bit better idea about what it's all about. Our guest this morning, Brian Deal, helped to develop the model. He is assistant research professor in architecture and urban and regional planning at University of Illinois. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Programming here on WILL made possible in part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields has an in-store nutritionist, provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, and supplements, as well as a full deli, coffee bar, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce. The broadcast is also made possible by a grant from Horeen's Pianos Plus, your Steinway piano showroom in Bloomington. Horeen's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. A little bit later today on the Afternoon Magazine, the subject is sleep. It's estimated that something like 40 million Americans suffer sleep problems, and maybe you were one of them. On the Afternoon Magazine today, Celeste Quinn will be talking about what's keeping us up, and her guest will be Dr. Meyer Krieger. He is a physician, an MD, who's been diagnosing and treating people with sleep disorders for more than 25 years. That's on the Afternoon Magazine in the 1 o'clock hour of the show today. The program itself will get underway at noon Central Time here on AM 580 with the usual mix of news and sports and weather and other sorts of things. The host for the program is Celeste Quinn. Coming up in the next part of this show, we will be talking with Sister Helen Prejean. She is a Roman Catholic nun who has become perhaps the best known opponent of capital punishment in the United States as a result of a book that she wrote a number of years ago titled Dead Man Walking, which was also made into a film. She has a new book out now that furthers the argument, raising this question, how often does it happen that someone who is not guilty is executed? And she profiles a couple of men in this book that she believes that were unjustly executed. It's titled The Death of Innocence, and she'll be talking with us in the next part of the show. We'll take a break now, as we usually do. We have news at 1 minute past the hour, and first, an update on the markets.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for his crops.